Welcome to Let's Talk Legal, part of Coastal Daybreak every Tuesday morning and brought to you by Harvell and Collins, attorneys at law. You can call in now to have your legal questions answered by attorneys Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins. Call in now with your questions at 252-247-7282.
And Cecil Harvell joins us now. Good morning, Cecil.
Good morning, Ben.
What are we talking about today?
Ben, let's talk about assets that pass outside the scope of the will. Or the last will and testament. And these are sometimes called will substitutes.
Okay.
And, I hasten to say that although the title might be called will substitutes are not necessarily a good thing.
Yeah.
Just okay. Because, there happens to be a nomenclature for this topic doesn't mean that it's something that our listeners mm-hmm. would like to, maybe participate in. But let's talk about some of the classic will substitutes mm-hmm. or assets that pass, upon our death outside the scope of our last will and testament.
Meaning regardless of what the will says.
Correct.
Okay.
Most of our listeners have a last will and testament, and I hereby devise and bequeath, my real estate, as follows. All the rest of my estate, meaning my cash, mm-hmm. my other assets, my stocks, my bonds, I hereby, devise and bequeath as follows. You know, many times, of course, to the spouse, then to the children, maybe in some sort of type of percentage, maybe something off to the grandchildren.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these are the classic last wills and testaments that we draft, okay?
Right, right.
However, let's talk about some things that, notwithstanding the terms of our will, the assets would not pass in that manner.
Mm-hmm.
And it's important to know what these things happen to be. One of the assets is the home place, if you will, or any real estate in the state of North Carolina that's titled between a husband and a wife, or spouses, whatever the case might be. And I say this because, sometimes in a second or third marriage,
mm-hmm.
folks are thinking that their home place or a parcel of land or whatever might pass to their children, if you will, from the prior marriage.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe, it was the family farm. Maybe it was the beach house, the second house at the beach or whatever, and they wanted that to pass on to their children. Well, if in the process of there being a mortgage or an equity line
mm-hmm.
or somehow the title to that property gets put in a manner whereby it's titled between the spouses.
Right.
Then, of course, upon the death of one spouse in the state of North Carolina, it automatically goes to the surviving spouse, notwithstanding what the will
mm-hmm.
or the trust might say.
Okay.
One of the themes, Ben, that we're going to talk about today over this next 30 minutes is that these are all fine and dandy, these, quote, will substitutes, if that's what your intention happens to be.
Right, right.
And this is all the more reason to seek out good advice with a good lawyer. Sit down and put forth, your facts and circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
It's no problem if your beach house is titled between spouses because there was a mortgage or a remortgage, a refinance,
mm-hmm.
an equity line put on that property 3 or 4 or 5 years ago when the interest rates started going down. There's no problem with that if that's what you intend to happen
mm-hmm.
in terms of it passing to your surviving spouse. But if you intend for that property to pass according to your will,
right.
and your will maybe goes to your prior children or the house goes to your grandchildren, then, of course, that's then where there's an inconsistency, and that's where there's a problem.
And that results in anything from will caveats to other challenges, right?
It really does, and our office is full of these kinds of gray matters that have turned into highly controversial cases, and we want to avoid that.
Right.
We've said from day one here on the program, 20 plus years ago, Ben, that there are some things in the area of passing of assets that we all share. Let's avoid taxes. Let's avoid excessive delay
mm-hmm.
and let's avoid excessive cost. We're going to have excessive delay. We're going to have excessive cost. If we don't have our assets titled consistent with what our intentions are and particularly consistent with our last will and testament. Now, let's move on to some other examples.
Okay.
One of the biggest examples is this registration of bank accounts, CDs, even, you know, very large stock accounts with our brokers, where the accounts, for whatever reason, have been made joint with right of survivorship or payable on death, or sometimes referred to as time on death. And it's almost as if been in this day and age, if you will, that these account registration contracts with the bank, with the broker, have become are being encouraged in some way by the bank or by the broker.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Mrs. Jones, if we do this form, then, you know, you will avoid probate,
mm-hmm.
might get said, or there'll be less delay in the settlement of your estate.
They'll be able to take care of your bills right away. That kind
yes.
of
and, of course, this is, you know, this is the tail wagging the dog. And that's not the case. Those statements are not accurate unless we know the whole picture.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the banker or the broker or whoever the case might be does not have necessarily before them the last will and testament mm-hmm. of their customer. I might also add, even in conferences that Wes and I have, folks will come in for a last will and testament conference
mm-hmm.
and bless their hearts, don't really know what their last will and testament says.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So to just rely on at a bank or a brokerage firm to rely on a customer that, well, mm-hmm. my last will and testament says the following, is not necessarily, again, very thorough.
Mm-hmm.
So be very careful to all of our listeners this morning about registering your accounts at your bank, your CDs, your stock accounts, payable on death, when, in fact, the last will and testament that you have might well set forth those assets in a different way or in a different manner. Now, Ben, this is very complicated and complex. Because some of our listeners are thinking, well, I want it to go to my spouse.
Right.
I think with regard to between spouses, mm-hmm. a lot of times, let's maybe say 8 times out of 10, we're okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's not really where the problem is. The problem is in the fact that the account is designated to a child mm-hmm. to the exclusion of the other children. Because that child is the perfect child who is taking care and paying the bills.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
They should be taking care and paying of the bills with a durable power of attorney.
Yes.
Not necessarily with a joint with right of survivorship or payable on death $200,000 or $300,000 bank account or stock account. That's not necessary.
Some will say, but it's so easy to just go ahead and put their name on the account.
It's not only easy, but it's also, you know, we estate lawyers see it as unfortunately even being advocated
mm-hmm.
by the stock
financial
companies, the financial institutions, the brokerage firms.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a last will and testament is going to talk about the two or three children, and it's going to have language like per stirpes,
mm-hmm.
so that if a child is not living, that share goes to the children of the deceased child.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe if that child is not living, it goes back to the other two children.
Right, right.
To the exclusion of maybe the grandchild.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe if that child is not living, the last will and testament might say that it goes to the spouse of that child,
mm-hmm.
okay, who is, you know, the daughter-in-law or the son-in-law that's held in such high esteem by the person
right.
making out the will.
Right.
We do have that happen
mm-hmm. sure.
where wills are drafted with that language.
Well,
okay.
Don't you think, none though, of that
these, none of these details, mm-hmm. Ben, none of these details are going to be on an account registration that simply leaves the assets to one child.
I think a lot of people come in, or probably come into your office, and they think, well, gosh, I don't want to keep on coming back. I need to make this mm-hmm. as general as possible in this last will and testament, because I don't know if that's going to be my intention in 10 years.
Well, I do think that folks have that belief. I have a lot to say about that, Ben. Mm-hmm. They shouldn't have to come back.
Mm-hmm.
And if the last wills and testament are drawn with the kind of particularity that they should be drawn, then they're not going to more than likely, you know, have to come back. The will should already address, well, what happens if a child dies?
Mm-hmm.
What happens if that particular executor is not living? Who is the alternate? Who is the third alternate?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I've had a run here lately on documentation where we're talking about a mother, father, two boys, let's say, that are in their 20s or 30s who have no children yet. And the question is, well, what if we're all four on a plane and mm-hmm. something were to happen?
Right.
We're planning a trip together. So the answer to the way around having to come back to the lawyer is to have the lawyer draft the document, which a good lawyer will do, with lots of contingencies and what ifs mm-hmm. right out of the gate.
Right.
You shouldn't have to come back to see your lawyer.
And couple that with the durable power of attorney, you know, in that conversation so that you know that that may be the document that might change over time.
No. Well, it could, yes, I guess. I don't know. A durable power of attorney is a pretty solid document.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're, again, you want to, the only thing that would change would be, first of all, the document needs to be up to date if mm-hmm. it's not. But, you know, again, you should have alternates, Ben.
Right.
You know, and that's sometimes what we don't see. But that's just because it wasn't prepared with the particularity that it needed from the get-go.
Okay. More to come in a moment here. If you have questions, I'm sure you do. Give us a call, 247-7282. Again, 252-247-7282. Cecil Harvell with us from Harvell and Collins Attorneys at Law. You can go online and listen to past shows and find them by topics, too, by going to harvellandcollins.com. We're talking with Cecil Harvell of Harvell and Collins Attorneys at Law here on Let's Talk Legal every Tuesday morning on Coastal Daybreak, and we're talking about assets that pass outside of the will.
Yes, and we were talking, Ben, I want to go back to a moment, you know, mm-hmm. when we have these POD accounts that are, let's say, you know, child 1, 2, and 3,
mm-hmm.
you know, our three children, 1, 2, 3, that's at the time, you know, all we're thinking. What if for some reason now one of those children is not living?
Mm-hmm.
See, the POD form is not going to go into the detail of the fact that, you know, well, what happens if Mary isn't living? A last will and testament will give us the detail that we need in order to cover these contingencies that, that might happen. So again, the PODs, the joint with right of survivorship designations, these, of course, again, Ben, can be a great problem for our clients. And we're seeing more and more of this
mm-hmm.
in our office because they're becoming more and more prevalent.
Yeah. Well, I think mm-hmm. a lot of people take out an account. It could be anything, insurance policy, annuities, any number of things. And they say in that, who's the benefactor?
Mm-hmm.
But that may not be what your complete intention is.
We've said here so many times, Ben, that, and of course the reason that the reason that these forms are getting, encouraged is to quote, the words are always the same. How, you know, Ms. Jones, we need to avoid probate.
Mm-hmm.
And of course what a probate lawyer says back to that is, well, you know, we're in the state of North Carolina here.
Mm-hmm.
We're in these great counties, Carteret, Craven, Pamlico, Jones, Beaufort, New Hanover. You know, there's not a problem with probate, Ben.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have excessive delay. We don't have excessive cost associated with the probate process. You don't always have to have a lawyer, I might add, with mm-hmm. regard to the probate process, unless a lawyer is needed, and sometimes the lawyer is only needed to dot the I or cross the T.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, probate is not, we are not in California or New York or Michigan, Illinois, some of these states that make probate extraordinarily complex for people.
Mm-hmm.
And who have a level of fee, if you will, or taxation on the local level.
Right.
You see.
Right.
So, again, you have to realize that that avoiding probate is sometimes and many times not what you want to have to avoid.
Mm-hmm.
You certainly don't want to imagine the scenario that I told you, that the account, that it is a large stock account. Very large,
right.
Let's say. I mean, we have files like this, $300,000-$400,000 that are designated to three children.
Mm-hmm.
One of the children has now died, and the account registration never got changed.
Yeah.
This now is a lawsuit.
Mm-hmm.
This is going to cost a whole lot more than the probate process.
Yes. It's a, trying to avoid a problem that it doesn't really exist.
Correct.
It's created a problem.
Correct.
Yeah.
That's exactly right.
So
yep.
again, that combination that you would always prefer is not only have the will, but also the power of attorney to handle a lot of those.
That's
things.
Right. Another asset that does not pass according to the will, of course, are lots of assets like IRAs,
mm-hmm.
annuities,
mm-hmm.
life insurance policies. These by definition have beneficiary designations,
mm-hmm.
and we designate a beneficiary. And the beneficiary designation documents, forms, if you will, need to be very precise, and they need to be looked at. You need to look at them carefully with your lawyer, okay? When your lawyer is doing estate planning for you and drafting a last will and testament, these issues should come up in the discussion so that your beneficiary designations are consistent, again,
mm-hmm.
with your intentions.
For example, could that just be the beneficiary be your estate?
It can be.
Mm-hmm.
And there are many times in our office that we recommend that the beneficiary be each other,
mm-hmm.
the husband, the wife, and then the estate of. Then it comes into the fold of the will, the trust, if you will, and passes, you know, according to the intention, the plan of action of those particular clients, which let's say, for instance, could be 80% to the children and 20% to the grandchildren.
Right.
Whatever the intention happens to be. If you fold the life insurance, the annuity into the estate, then of course it will pass according to those percentages set forth in your will.
Mm-hmm.
If we're dealing with a retirement account, an account that has not had the income tax paid, then it is true that we, the lawyer, are going to need to kind of think twice about naming the estate as
mm-hmm.
the beneficiary.
Right.
Because there could be the recapture immediate of the deferred income tax. But there are some provisions
mm-hmm.
that we can add in a well-drafted estate plan that will help us avoid this recapture of the immediate income tax.
Mm-hmm.
But again, what you're beginning to see, Ben, is the importance of all of these issues being discussed at the table and the right hand and the left hand getting coordinated here.
All right. I'll take another short break. We'll be back. Again, your questions, we'll have time enough for a couple of questions if you want to call in 247-7282 to ask your questions about your last will and testament and also payable on death accounts, time on death accounts, and how those work and not work. We'll have more on that coming up in a moment. Welcome back to Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins, again online at harvellandcollins.com. Mm-hmm. All right, we were talking about all those accounts and some of the steps that people need to take to avoid those issues.
Ben, I think that You kind of nailed it here with regard to, you know, reviewing with the lawyer at the initial consultation, at the follow-up meetings, you know, what the assets happen to be, whether or not they pass by beneficiary, whether or not there happens to be a registration by payable on death or something that might otherwise complicate the estate, and kind of looking at these things in a detailed manner, and just making sure that the plan is consistent, you know, all the way around the board.
Mm-hmm.
This is just critically important. We back to real property for a minute. We talked about this classification of real property in North Carolina called tenants by entirety.
Right.
Let's keep in mind that by deed, you can make property survivorship property,
mm-hmm,
by including language in the deed that the property is joint with right of survivorship.
Mm-hmm.
We see that in some plans now. And again, that's very good planning, as long as that's consistent with what the client's intention happens to be.
Okay, so tenants by entirety would be in a marriage, right?
It would be,
yeah,
by definition, so, between spouses in,
right,
the state of North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the idea, the concept being that a spouse would want their land, it has to be their land, their,
right,
real estate, to pass to their surviving spouse. And we all know that this probably is 90% of the time what an intention would be, unless for some reason, you know, it's a
mm-hmm,
family property that for whatever reason was to pass to the children or grandchildren or something of that nature.
But the place you have to watch out for is if that family property, you've refinanced it, for example, and you,
that's,
end up,
right,
with both on the title.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Or another place where it comes up is where folks bought the property when they were not married,
mm-hmm,
or one or the two of them owned the property and then got married,
mm-hmm,
brought the property into the marriage, okay, just at the time that they got married. And then, of course, there's a refinance, and for some reason it then gets put title jointly.
Mm-hmm.
And that wasn't necessarily what they intended.
So there are ways to handle that, but you have to ask that question, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But, you know, and we mentioned about a durable power of attorney, but also, again, in the will, has to draft a good understanding of who the executors are going to be, and those, because the power of attorney dies with the client.
It does. The power of attorney has no validity after we die and the executor takes over.
Mm-hmm.
What we need in these documents are good alternates.
Mm-hmm.
We see so many wills where, yes, there was, you know, the spouse was named, but there's no alternate.
Right.
Or there's one child, but that child is now of advanced age and unable to handle it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no third alternate. So we like to see, and in our office, in our practice, we always have three alternates, Ben.
Mm-hmm.
That's always best, to have a backup in those documents.
Mm-hmm. And again, mm-hmm, if a spouse is may already be in nursing care and not able to execute that kind of thing.
Correct.
So you want to have those other alternates,
exactly,
in there. All right. Again, if you want to find out the best legal advice, you want to call the folks at Harvell & Collins, go to harvellandcollins.com and find out more. You can call and make that appointment or stop by their Bridges Street location for an appointment as well, too. And we'll have more coming up in just a moment here on Coastal Daybreak on the Talk Station.